Hey folks, welcome back to the Visual Studio 2013 launch. I'm Dan Fernandez and we have an interesting session. This is actually gonna cover two topics. First, we're covering Visual Studio Online Monaco, and I put quotes because it's a code name, as well as some of our Azure tooling. So Mohit, why don't you quickly introduce yourself for folks?
Sure, yeah, my name is Mohit. I work on the Azure Developer Experience team. I'm responsible for tooling in Visual Studio, as well as a bunch of our Azure SDKs.
Okay.
My name is Chris Dias. I'm the program manager on Visual Studio Online Monaco.
Monaco. Yep. And we got to make sure to try and use the air quotes the entire time we say it.
We're good. Yeah.
It's going to be great. So, one, remember, this is time for live Q&A. Maybe some folks haven't seen Monaco, and we do want to do a quick demo of it before we get into questions. But please send your questions, as well as questions on what's coming in the Azure SDK 2.2, what is available for cloud developers. But, Chris, why don't you start off, and we'll start with the demo, because everybody loves demos.
All right. So we'll start off with a demo of Monaco. We're going to start in the Windows Azure portal. And this is my own, you know, chris@diasfam.com account that I have. And I've got a number of websites over here. But let's start. We'll go create a new website. We'll go right from the beginning. We'll do a quick create, and we'll call it, I always like to name them beginning with Thermo, because that's my site name. So we'll call it Thermo Dan. And we'll create it in West US. And we'll just go create a website. Now, the reason I'm creating this website is because I want to start from scratch with the whole process and show you what it looks like when you're coming up into Azure and you want to start using Monaco. Another reason is, you know, sometimes you don't want to edit your production website live. Mm-hmm. And so you want to create a site which is kind of like a companion or a development site. Where are you going to go and do your work? And let's see, we're getting some feedback here. Let's just refresh the page and make sure that our site gets created. We got a little bit of limited feedback on there. Do you know what?
So what we'll do is actually have Mohit live debug from the portal.
F5.
We just had to refresh the page. That's fine.
So it worked on my machine. So
we created ThermoCloud Dan. And the first thing we have to do is actually go turn on editing. For Monaco. The reason is we didn't want to make it so that every website, all of a sudden, boom, there was an editing endpoint that you could go at. So you want to make a conscious decision. So you can go to the Configure tab in the portal for that particular site. And if you scroll down here, you can see there's a link that says Edit in Visual Studio Online. And we'll turn that on. And once we do that, we can save the configuration to the website. And that'll update the site for us. And once that's done, we can go back over to the dashboard. And what that'll do is give us a link to edit in Visual Studio Online. All right? So once you turn that on, that link will become available. And when I click on that, I'll get prompted for some credentials. And these are my deployment credentials that I can set up for the site. I get that right. And then we'll get prompted for that, and then we'll end up in the Monaco development environment for that particular website. So what's interesting about it is if you look at the URL, we're actually on the website. We're just at the SCM endpoint. And we're actually editing the www.root, the live endpoint of this particular website. So if I go run this site that we just created, what's going to happen is you're going to get the standard empty Azure website page, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see that page is over here. Whoops, that's my other one that we'll jump to. But you can see that's the page. This is the default page that you get when you create a site in Azure. So it's not very interesting. So let's just go and delete this page. So we'll right-click and say delete. And we'll create just a new simple page just to kind of show you how easy it is. We'll call it index.html. That creates a new file in the website. And we'll press Control Space. We have some snippets in here to get you started. So we'll do an HTML snippet. And you know, this is the title. And we can tab through the fields just like you can in Visual Studio. And we'll
say,
Hello World. Right, the very most simplistic 1980s web page. I'll just get rid of these lines. And what's cool is I can press Control-7 and we'll comment them out. Now if we go back to the same page that we had before and we refresh the page, come on, you can see that now we're actually editing our site live in Monaco. And so really, we're not going to go create an entire website from here. What you can do is actually bring your code in. And we have support for bringing code in through Git. I can come in here and I can connect to my Visual Studio Online account. And if I have repositories over there that are in Git, it'll enumerate them and you can choose one and we'll clone it into the website. I can paste in a Git endpoint from any place that's public, and I can bring my code in that way. I can upload files, I can zip them up and bring them up in that fashion. So we don't want to watch the whole clone process happen. So we'll go over here. I just have another website. It's on the same subscription. So if I go back, it's my ThermalCloud Dev site, which you can see now I'm in ThermalCloud Dev, and we're all in sort of the same place. And the first time you start the environment here, you would get a quick start. We can kind of learn about the IDE. You can jump to channel 9 and see some videos on how to get started and things like that. But over on the left-hand side, now we have the full set of files that are in my repository for this particular website. So now if we browse to this site, you'll see that this is the little application that I have that sort of controls my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been building this for a while, and it's kind of an easy site to sort of understand and work with, right? Like everybody understands like thermostat and lights
sure,
and
sure.
all that stuff. So that's the site that we have. So we can go in here and we can start to make modifications to this site. It is a node.js site, so server.js is kind of the starting point in this application. And you can see we've got some standard JavaScript in here, but if I come in and I say var, if I just say like express, I hit dot, and I get IntelliSense. And I'm getting IntelliSense actually on the express framework for Node. And the reason that we're able to do that, like it's rich IntelliSense, you get methods, interfaces, classes, you get JS dot comments and parameter tips and all that stuff.
Awesome.
The reason we get that is because we actually have a link, a /// reference link to express.d.ts. Now, express.d.ts is a TypeScript declaration file. And all that does is define what the shape is of the Express framework in Node. And so there's a project out on the web, it's called Definitely Type, where there's tens, maybe even 100 now, different TypeScript declarations for popular frameworks in JavaScript. And you can bring those into Monaco, and once you do that, we can then offer up great IntelliSense experiences for those libraries. And so that's why we get great IntelliSense for Express and HTTP and every other thing that you can reference that way. So from there, what else can we do in here? So it's just standard JavaScript, great IntelliSense experiences. We have validation. So if we hover over the word, the variable chat here, you can see it's an unused local variable. And if I say chat dot, I get IntelliSense for that because that's a common JS module. And we'll get rich IntelliSense there. And then, of course, our validation will be rectified. Now, we're actually using TypeScript in the background to do the validation. We have a set of rules that we've established with TypeScript that will go through and provide that information for us for JavaScript. A couple other things while we're in here. You can see that I've got the symbol app selected. Oops, I'll click on that. And there's a couple interesting things. Because we're using TypeScript, we understand the structure of this particular file and the usage of this. So any assignments are colored in orange, any reads are colored in yellow. I can do things like right-click on here and say, rename symbol, and we'll actually go into a rename mode or multi-cursor editing for the symbol, and we can say application, right? So we can do, editing across the entire file. And it's symbolic, so it's editing it in the right place
it's
across the file.
It's refactoring as opposed to just,
exactly.
Find and replace.
Exactly. So that's some of the great stuff we can do with JavaScript. One other thing I want to show you is what we can do with something like less. So we have great support for less and CSS in Monaco. And so if you bring up a less file, you can see that we actually put the colors in line. I can come in here and type in like red, and we'll automatically bring up the colors for you. You can even do pound 112233, and we'll figure out what color that is. It looks like black to me. But we'll go back to, it'll say Azure, and that gives us that. If I want to look at the CSS file right next to it, I can right-click on it and say open to the side. And, I clicked on it first, but I could have multiple files open side by side, and I can even drag them around. So if I want to reposition them.
Cool.
If I want to open up, my HTML, my CSS, my JavaScript, I can arrange them in the appropriate order. So I get great experiences in here. If I want to compile my CSS or my less, I can go to the console, and we have a bunch of built-in functions in the console that you can run. So you can do express things, jade, jig, all sorts of interesting things, including running the less compiler, things that you installed from NPM. You can run that from the console. And the last thing I want to show you is our support for source code control. So we use Git for backing up our files, And so we've made a bunch of changes so far. Like if I click on server.js, I can scroll around and actually see side by side the diffs that the changes that we've made. I can actually even go into inline view, and you can see them that way. If that's a preferred method, you can navigate between them. And what's interesting is actually with Visual Studio Online, if you go to your repository and you look at your sources there, your changes, the same editor that we have here in Monaco is used over in Visual Studio Online. Mm-hmm. I can go and commit all my changes, just one, you know, Dan demo, and just hit enter, and boom, we'll commit them. And then I can just push it back to my endpoint when the commit is done. And if I have continuous delivery set up between my development repository, my source code repository, and my development site, it'll automatically push off to production and update my website live. So that is a very whirlwind tour.
That is the quick and dirty. Awesome. Yes. And it worked. Yay.
No fear. There you go.
All right, so I'm just moving this stuff over here. And remember, this is our chance to get live Q&A. So for folks, as you have questions, please feel free to ask some questions. I got, I think, the live teleprompter going on here, so we should hopefully get some questions in. But just while we're on the topic on Monaco, you mentioned support for server-side JavaScript, client-side JavaScript, CSS, HTML. Is there other things or obviously, TypeScript,
PHP support.
Okay.
TypeScript is interesting. You can do TypeScript if you want to actually do the compilation. You can do npm install of TypeScript, and then you can run the TypeScript compiler from the console. We have PHP support, so if you go create a WordPress site or something in Azure, you can do all the PHP. You can do managed code, ASP.NET, VB, and C# web applications. You can go to the console and execute MS Build to update your binaries.
So I can actually, you know, potentially do my Hello World console. Well, let's say it was an ASP.NET application, so, you know, response.write Hello World.
Exactly.
And get IntelliSense on it.
Well, you get statement completion. You get textual statement completion. What we don't have is a language service that runs in the browser that can give me IntelliSense for managed code. So you get, like, basically it's whatever text is in the file, which actually over time as more and more things get in the file, it becomes more and more accurate.
Okay.
But you can compile that. You can run MS Build at the command, the console, and then you can run your site. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. And you mentioned this is actually in Visual Studio Online as well. And there's some other sites that are using this, right?
So, the basis of Monaco is there's a rich editor. That you can see, obviously, in the workbench. Mm-hmm. And that editor is actually using a number of different properties that are coming out of Microsoft. So if you have a SkyDrive account and you have source code stored in your SkyDrive account, you can create new source files and you can browse them. You're going to use the Monaco editor to do that. If you're in the Azure portal today and you're creating Azure mobile services and you want to write some APIs or some CRUD scripts, that's the Monaco editor. The workbench is also hosted in the Office 365 tools, a code name Napa. We've shipped that quite a few months ago now. So that's been out there. There's a number of research sites. And in fact, actually, the F12 tools that ship in IE actually use the Monaco editor.
That's sweet.
For debugging, yep.
So people listening, they love the, say, IntelliSense statement completion, et cetera. If I wanted to include it on my site, and is there a third-party story here to include Monaco on my website?
There is not a third-party story yet.
Okay. Oh, I like that last part. That was great.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So they will email you directly, and we do have some questions coming in specifically on Monaco. So I'll just cut to
All
this
right.
one.
All right.
Dan asks, is Monaco only for Azure websites, or could I use it for a desktop app that I have hosted in TFS?
It is only for Azure websites.
Okay.
So what's actually happening is your Azure website has Monaco as a part of it. We went to the actual Azure website that you're working on and opened up the tools for that effectively. And the changes that we made were against dubdubroot. It's a live editing of that site.
Sure, sure.
And so you're actually working off of that website. There is no concept of it working locally against something on your machine mm-hmm. because the server and the services behind it are actually running in Azure, in your
right,
website.
Right, right. So yeah, for desktop for sure.
Yep.
Now Frank asks, and this is actually a very interesting question. How do you debug in Monaco? So I have my script, you know, maybe, you know, for loop in JavaScript. How would I... Can I add a breakpoint? Is there any concept of that?
So there's no debugging support in Monaco
okay.
Today. I'm not sure when, if ever, we will put debugging support on it.
Okay.
It's something clearly that we all want and kind of need, but we want to see how it evolves over time.
And is it fair to say it's kind of the same way you do it today, which would be use some of the browser tools?
You use the browser tools for things that are happening on the client. Of course, you can use Visual Studio. And, and actually, you can probably talk about this better now that we support debugging in Azure with Visual Studio. I think that's the preferred method for this.
Yeah, I can add to that. So as he mentioned, the demo he just showed was actually hosted on an Azure website. So with the latest Azure SDK 2.2, you can now remote debug your Azure website right from inside VS. And if you think about that for a second, it's kind of crazy because an Azure website is a shared hosting environment.
Right, right.
But we've done all the magic so that you can actually attach a debugger from within VS to websites and be completely isolated from other websites running in the same tenant. And the experience is really streamlined and really simple.
Remote debugging is magic. The fact that I'm able to, there's some Azure website going on and it's in, you know, Asia or something, and I'm all of a sudden getting data back from it, it's total magic.
And we've worked to make the experience really streamlined. So if you've used the Server Explorer in Visual Studio before, there's a node for websites. So simply I right-click the website I want to debug, choose remote debug, and all the magic happens under the covers for me. So the debugger gets started, the endpoint gets opened, and the attach happens for me, and I'm debugging against my Azure website right from within VS.
Yeah, you know, just taking a step back, like obviously remote debugging is like a huge feature that, that folks have been wanting to do in Azure. But what are some of the other things in 2.2 that, you know, I'm an ASP.NET developer, why do I care about the Azure 2.2 SDK?
Yeah, there's a number of new features in Azure SDK 2.2. I'd say generally they fall in the theme of making it a lot easier to connect Visual Studio with your Azure assets.
Okay.
And why is that interesting? Well, it's interesting if I want to quickly publish my app from VS to the cloud. It's easy, you know, it's useful if I want to use Server Explorer to maybe seed some data in storage. So there was a lot of friction towards getting all of that set up in prior releases of Azure and prior releases of VS. We've tried to make that much easier in 2.2. So the first feature is sign-in. And you say sign-in. Like, that seems like the most obvious thing you need to do to get started. But for those of you who've used Visual Studio in Azure before, the old sign-in was a complicated process. You had to go to the portal, you had to burn a client certificate, you had to import that into VS, and very quickly, if you share that certificate with friends, it's very hard to keep track of who signed in, not to mention the experience.
The getting started
experience being painful. So what we've done now is I can right-click any of the Azure assets within Azure nodes or whatnot within VS and just say sign in. And I can either use my Microsoft account, or the cool part, if you're an organization, is you can use your org ID as well. And you know, you can connect the dots.
And that would be like at Microsoft.com, for example, right?
At Microsoft.com versus your own domain, you can go.
Right, as opposed to, you know, my personal Outlook.com.
And the cool part of if you want to use your organizational account is you can sync that with an on-premise Active Directory. So if within your organization someone leaves and you want to make sure that he or she is no longer using those Azure assets, it's a simple gesture in your Active Directory. Before, with the client certs, you really had no easy way of doing that unless you remembered that
they had the keys to the kingdom
this cert was associated with this user. So that's probably the biggest feature.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things and surprising to me was MSDN subscribers get $150 a month to spin up and use on Azure as they like. And a number of these folks don't even use the benefit. Like, you have $150 for whatever you want to do a month. And it's a huge benefit that isn't being used by customers. And it seemed like the MSDN benefits actually kind of auto-unlock. So if you are just upgrading the 2.2, is that a fair assessment?
That's absolutely correct. And you no longer need a credit card as well. So if you sign in with the account associated with your MSDN, you're good to go, and the benefits automatically are
enabled. That's fantastic for somebody with credit rating problems like Chris. So that's definitely going to be a useful feature. So that's definitely cool. And again, feel free to send us questions on Azure SDK 2.2 features. So what other stuff was sort of top of mind?
Yeah, so we spoke a bit about remote debugging, but just to kind of complete the story there, remote debugging is supported now first class for both cloud services and websites.
Mm-hmm.
The experience for cloud services is very similar. You can, with cloud services, I can either right-click my entire web role. So let's say I have 5 instances of my web role running. I can right-click the entire role and say, hey, I want to debug. And if any of my instances hit that breakpoint, VS will break for me, which is kind of nice if you're not able to pinpoint which instance might, because it's behind a load balancer, which instance you want to pinpoint.
What happens if, let's say we have our page load event, have a breakpoint, there's five roles out there, a customer goes, that breakpoint hits, my debugger pops up. But what happens to the customer who's on the other side that made that request? Like, how does that happen?
Right, so you have the option to take an instance off of the load balancer.
Okay.
So that's an important thing to understand. So if you know exactly which instance is misbehaving, you can right-click the specific instance and say, hey, I want to take this off the load balancer before I attach a debugger and potentially break the experience for a customer. You know, the opposite case you talked about, sure, maybe I attach to the role as opposed to a specific instance, but as soon as an instance gets pinpointed, I have the option to say off the load balancer so my customers are not impacted.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, so it's the customer. You probably don't want to do that, no. Say, in production, force everyone down.
I mean, we recommend this pretty heavily as part of your dev lifecycle.
For sure.
I think all the usual disclaimers apply about using remote debugging for production. You know, in many cases, it's really not the right thing to do.
Right. The iDebug in production should be a joke, not a way of life. So we do have some questions. So, and again, we are trying to stump both Chris and Mohit here. So this one is a pretty easy one. It's for Chris. Howard asks, what are the key scenarios for using Monaco? So when would I want to use it? Am I going to take over all my development now online in a browser? What are some of the key scenarios?
So I think there's sort of two main scenarios. One is sort of getting started, right? So you can go and quickly spin up a website and get started building it. It's very friction-free. You can hit it from any browser on any platform. The second scenario is sort of the quick tweak. I need to make a change to the site. Maybe I need to go modify some HTML, some CSS, or something. I want to do it very rapidly, very quickly. It's a relatively safe change. And maybe I don't have access to my desktop. I can come at it from any machine. Or maybe I'm in the middle of some other big thing, and I want to go make this tweak. So instead of changing context, you can just go to the site, turn it on, make that change, and push it off to production. So those are the two big scenarios that we see today.
Okay.
Yeah,
and a related question from Diego Fernando Trujillo. I hope I got the name right. Hi, I want to understand the main advantage having code on VS Online over having code on VS Desktop with TFS like Central Repo, for example. So in some cases, people are thinking one or the other, but it really, do you want to kind of answer that?
Yeah, so I think the question is, like, what's the purpose? Like, if you have the code that's on your desktop, and you are persisting it in Visual Studio Online in the repository mm-hmm. there, and you've got that hooked up to your production website. If you have access to it on your machine, you have Visual Studio. Visual Studio is clearly the most powerful tool out there, so there is really no advantage to it in the browser. It's if you don't have access to that, or you're from some other device where you don't have your machine, or you just need to do a quick sync or change to the site, where you don't have to go through the whole process of pulling all the code down, setting it all up, and then pushing it back. That's one big advantage. I think the other advantage that we can start to see is that in Monaco, you're actually running in the context of Azure, mm-hmm. right? Because you are actually live editing the site itself. And so there isn't the idea of where you're going to run it locally and all these different emulators and things like that. You can run it in the context and you get the real sort of live
right.
experience.
So which is that iterative experience, hey, maybe there's like this lab's website. Let me see what this does, F5. Yeah. Let me see.
And so there's another way to think about it, too, is there's your machine that you have is kind of, it's this box that you're working on. And there's lots of thinking like, hey, maybe we want to move that box to the cloud. Like having a VM in the cloud of Visual Studio is a very interesting thing, but it's still kind of this box, and you still have to do the movement of code around.
Mm-hmm.
In this model, what we've got is a development experience, which is very coupled with the Azure platform itself, right? So you have this very fluid experience. And reminding me when you said, hey, it's live editing, it's you're seeing it as it happens. And that's because we brought it close together with Azure and with Azure websites. So you get a much more fluid experience by actually editing the site itself live. Right, so we think it's interesting from that perspective. Right? You have very tight coupling with the site, the platform. We can do things because we are there. And it's not a separate box someplace off in the cloud where you have to bring things in, bring SDK, you know, all these different things you have to do.
Right.
It's all in one place where you're actually running your site.
Yeah, I mean, I think what another really interesting scenario just on there is just browsing code. So if Sorry. I'm if I mm-hmm. a person, maybe my job role is a tester or somebody else, that maybe I just want to see like what was going on in this thing, I want to just browse the code. I don't want to have to install Visual Studio, connect right. up, you know, connect up to the repo, then realize I have a dependency on, you know, the two SDKs, yep. get the NuGet packages, yep. everything else. Like, let me just see the code and just think about it from that.
Exactly.
So there was a question on Azure here, but it somehow went away. But let me get to this one, which is an amazing name. So I think people are having fun with the text box. Franklin Jones Goldchain Senior the Lionhearted asks, what's coming in Monaco? So what are, you know, we just announced and they're already asking you what is coming down the road? So you mentioned yet already for in terms of thinking about extensibility, but what are some of the other things where, and maybe you want feedback from customers on?
Well, actually, that's really the answer, is we want to see how people react to what we've provided with Monaco for Azure websites. You know, it's a new endeavor for us, and a lot of what we're trying to do is get that data back to see what people are trying to do, see what people want to do, to see if this experience is actually the right experience for folks. Because it's a service, because we can get information relatively quickly on how people are using it, we can react relatively quickly to the features that we add to it. We want to find out, like, does this make sense for people to go and use? Mm-hmm. Or does it make, like, you know what, it's great, it's a toy, but we're just going to use Visual Studio on the desktop. And we'll be able to find that out.
Sure.
And so that's really the next step. And there's a whole broad range of things that we could possibly do.
And what's the best way to get feedback? Is it the user the typical user voice scenario, or have you all set up your own feedback?
Send a smile. Send a smile right from inside there.
But okay, that's
we also
a great
have
one.
A form over in Azure, so we have the send a smile.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the two big
okay.
ones.
Yep. Okay. There was a question before, and it was blob drive support. So if I am a developer, I want to be able to see blobs from inside the tooling. Is there some way, and I think it was specifically asking about mounting drives, but is there support for blobs and...
Yeah, so the Server Explorer in Visual Studio supports blobs. So that lets you do things like enumerate blobs, list blobs. And it does have, I think this is what the question's alluding to, there is some support for certain file types.
Okay.
Like you can double click on a JPEG and have the right thing happen, those kinds of things.
Okay.
There's no tooling currently in VS for double clicking on a blob drive and having the intelligent, you know, kind of intelligent thing happen, like the VHD be interpreted. So that's, you know, that's a great suggestion, and you know, please feel free to follow up with us, and that's something we can certainly explore.
Yeah, and the questions here back was from Tim. Is there anything new with respect to attaching blobs as drives? So really, it seems like the new thing is the Server Explorer lighting up. Is that
With respect to the VS tooling, that's correct.
Right.
Yeah, obviously, there's Azure features, both in cloud services and VMs, where you can upload a VHD to blob storage and attach it as a data drive. So that support is there. But there's no specific VS light up for that right now.
OK, great. Nicholas Peterson asks, Core's support for blobs seems to be held up. Is this really close to release?
Yes, I want to be a little bit careful because I'm not on the storage team that's delivering.
We're not careful, so if you want to be, that's
delivering
fantastic.
That feature, but yeah, it is very close. It's very close. So we know it opens up tons of scenarios for customers who maybe want to use storage assets from client apps within the browser.
And for folks who aren't familiar with even what he's asking, core support for blobs, what's the idea there, and what's the customer benefit?
Yeah, so the idea is I want to access a blob. Let's say I'm doing an app in my browser, and I'm doing a modern single page style app, and I want to directly access the blob from my browser without having to go through a proxy or go through a mid-tier. A lot of reasons why that makes sense. Performance is one of them.
Sure.
So core is, you know, because typically your blob URI is going to be different than the URI that's serving up your web page or whatnot. Cores is a technology that makes it possible to do that in a secure way. So I can download blobs,
it's the interact with cross-domain thing.
Cross-domain, so sure? I can download blobs, interact with blobs directly in my browser without having to deal with building that mid-tier.
Okay, awesome. Now, Jeremy Hilder asks, any plans to add SAS support?
To Monaco.
Sure.
It is currently in development.
Okay, that's a great answer. So yeah, we have less, obviously, and these are, you know, enhancements for folks who are doing a lot of web development. Yeah. Do you want to just kind of, I guess, give the quick less or SAS for folks who maybe don't know?
Yeah, so like less and SAS are kind of like programmatic ways to do CSS. So you can like create variables and they get, you know, factored out through the entire CSS file when you compile it. So they're pretty cool in that perspective. And then they have an AST, so we can do interesting things, or we can build up an AST for them, so we can do interesting things like rename, refactoring, and go to definition and things like that. So we actually have a new guy starting on the team, and his first project is to go and build the SAS.
I hope he knows this, because it would be terrible for him to find out during a live PS. We need that yesterday. And a customer asked for it in the live event, so that's awesome. Hugh asks, will Monaco work in a staging environment?
What is a staging environment? That's the question.
So if I, let's say I have a production and staging, can I point it to staging, maybe do iterative live changes there, and then actually deploy? Or is it, because you know, you were mentioning some of the production where you may not want to edit production, is it possible to point it to a staging?
But there's, so... in Azure websites today, there's no concept of staging. You kind of
you'd probably have to copy it.
Yeah, you have to. You have to go and say, okay, this
when you're
is
talking
my staging
the
PaaS environment.
Environment. It's very easy to have a staging in production because you're doing this swap. Yeah.
So you kind of define, okay, this is my staging one. And since it's an Azure website, it works there. But there's no concept of staging or production in Monaco. It's just working against a website.
And we were talking about Windows Azure websites versus PaaS or WebRoll websites or whatever the word is.
Windows Azure websites only.
Yeah, so are you all, but you all are looking to add support for that in the future, or it's something you'd want customer feedback on?
We'd want feedback on that, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Stan asks, will Monaco be used as the source viewer editor in the TFS web access?
So the editor today that you see in TFS Web Access, Visual Studio Web Access, is the Monaco editor.
So you all have done the work and Stan is unaware of this.
Well, maybe what Stan is asking is whether or not you'll be able to use the Workbench environment for source code browsing in Visual Studio Online. And so we think that's a very interesting experience. And so we're definitely exploring that idea.
Cool. So. Very cool. I like when I hear exploring, so, and not knows. HA asks, is there SharePoint development support in Monaco? So I'm a SharePoint developer. I need to make, say, a CSS change. Is that something that's supported or something that you also are looking at?
So no, we haven't thought about that one too much. It's very much focused on just your plain vanilla Azure website.
Okay. So. And as you can see, you're getting demands from all sorts
which
of...
Which I know, which I think is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim asks a question on SDK 2.2. Will folks on VS 2012 be able to open projects with Azure SDK 2.2, or is it for VS 2013 only?
No, Azure SDK 2.2 is supported on both on both versions of VS. So really two ways to answer that question, but the short answer is as long as you've installed Azure SDK 2.2 on both versions of VS, you should be fine. You can create it in VS 2013, open it up in VS 2012, or vice versa. Now, just one caveat I wanted to put: there's a lot of things that are NuGet packages nowadays. So when you say Azure SDK, if you're using like the storage client library, in that case, you don't even need the Azure SDK per se. You can obviously just take your package, your project, the NuGet package, open it up in the prior version of VS, even without the full Azure SDK install.
Cool. Cool. All right. Hopefully this one is an easy one, which is by Steve. Where is the best place to start when beginning Azure development?
Good question. I'd like to think it's easy. It wasn't necessarily easy in the past. But the best place to start is WindowsAzure.com. And when you go to WindowsAzure.com, there's a documentation center. So click on documentation. Within documentation, pick .NET, and there's a bunch of getting started articles
I did see a bunch of videos. Both the Channel 9 folks have been posting videos sort of step by step. And it really depends on what you're looking to do in Azure, just because Azure is so large and sometimes it's even hard to grasp all the different things you can do.
Azure is very large. You know, if you're truly are getting started for the first time, like you and I have talked about this in the past too, I think Azure Websites is a great place to get started. Mm-hmm. And then from Azure Websites, you can then blossom. You know, you choose other services from there.
Yeah, pay as you go. Maybe add some SQL Server, maybe some storage, and so on. You know, one of the things folks may be watching this are saying, "Hey, I'm not a web developer. This isn't really relevant to me." We got some questions on desktop. What about mobile developers? Like, why would a mobile developer, say whether it's iOS, Android, or care about Azure just in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, what we're finding is when people say mobile nowadays, it's really two things. It's my mobile front end, which is how it projects into iOS or, you know, my Android phone, but it's almost always a back end. If I'm doing a game, I need to keep a leaderboard. You know, if I'm doing some kind of productivity app, undoubtedly I have to back some data on the server. So it really is mobile plus a backend.
Right.
And you know, Azure has a very unique offering for that backend piece. It's called Azure Mobile Services. And really what we've tried to do is, what are all the common things that you do when you do a mobile backend? And rather than having you recreate that from scratch, what if we just put that into a service? So some of the really cool things provided by Azure Mobile Services, you know, simple data as a service. So if you want to do tables, supported for you. Authentication. You generally, if you do a mobile app, you want to support Facebook Auth. You want to support maybe a Microsoft account.
Sure.
All that stuff is provided natively. Push notifications. And one of the most interesting things recently is also API support, custom API. Because mobile services does this thing where it handles the user management for you, it handles the OAuth stuff for you. But what if I want to go beyond what mobile services typically supported, which is just putting data? I can now plug in on the back end using JavaScript and soon .NET, which we've announced. I can now hook in other APIs as well, like SendGrid for sending mail, et cetera.
Oh, right. That's a great example.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, of course, use the Monaco editor when you're writing your scripts for Azure Mobile Services.
Chris gets paid by the times Monaco gets edited, he's going to make out great.
And the other part I wanted to add on that is, you know, it's we've done all this backend stuff. We actually have SDKs too, so with starter apps. So if you're targeting iPhone, you can actually download our iOS Mobile Services SDK, and there's a starter app for you.
Oh, that's
which
great.
Actually
is
wide.
It the Todo one?
It's a Todo app. It's right from our portal. You pick which platform you're targeting. You can download a starter Xcode project in this case.
Right.
And you know, a lot of the wiring and plumbing is done for you right off the bat.
Awesome. Very cool. We got about 5 minutes, or just maybe 2.5 minutes left, at least by that. Question here, Saurabh Jain asks, where should we look for the steps to migrate current websites to Azure in Monaco? So I'm a developer. I got a Windows regular website. I want to be able to push it to Azure and be able to use some of these cool features in Monaco. What's the steps there?
Well, I mean, you can do that today, right? Like, the whole point is to get your code up into an Azure website. So the easiest thing to do is just go to Azure, create an empty website, set up some sort of deployment through source code control. Mm-hmm. You're in a Git repository. The portal in Azure will give you the Git clone URL endpoints. And then you can just add that to your local enlistment and then push it right up to Azure. And once the source code is up there, then Monaco is available for that site. Like, Monaco is always available next to the site, and so it's just a matter of really getting the source code into there. And so how do you get it in there? Two ways. One is through source code. The other one is you can actually take a zip file of all your source and upload it through Monaco and put it into the site.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Which is interesting, because if you think about Azure Mobile Services, like we were talking about, the sample applications for Azure Mobile Services all come pre-configured and pre-packaged in the Azure portal when you create your Azure Mobile Service. Mm-hmm. And one of those is an HTML JavaScript website as a zip file. So you can go and pull that zip file down and then bring it up in a...
So even use the pre-built one and then get that edit experience for people who want to play with Monaco. It seems like a great, easy way to get
started. Yeah, so you can
use
Monaco to build the front end to your Azure application, your Azure Mobile Service back end and sort of build that piece first, and then you can start to add on different clients for Azure Mobile Services.
Cool. And Mohit, anything in terms of, you know, whether the person has dependencies on SQL Server, maybe it was an on-prem SQL Server, or things that they need to keep in mind in terms of not just moving the code, But hey, if you're looking to use, you know, what version of SQL Server and some of the things to think about, migration, potential gotchas, and so on.
Yes, I think there's maybe two questions baked in there. One is maybe a little bit SQL specific, and then there's perhaps another question about, like, just in general, when you're migrating from on-prem to the cloud, what do you have to keep in mind? So I'll start with the SQL part. So with SQL, there's really two SQL offerings within Azure. One is one of them is SQL in a VM, and those are already provided as images in the Azure portal. So if you find the version of SQL that you're familiar with, you happen to be using on-prem, it's the same version. The learning curve is really low. It's the same SQL Server you would
run. It's the same thing. It's just in a virtual machine on the cloud.
Yep. And there's also a SQL as a service offering. It's called Windows Azure SQL Database. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to manage the database at all. At least the OS, the connection between the database and the OS, you don't have to manage at all.
Right.
It's SQL as a service offering. There's a different set of considerations around scale and planning that go into Windows Azure SQL Database than SQL Server, so that there may be a bit more of a learning curve just because it's a bit different. But once you get past that, the amount of ongoing management you have to do will be less than managing your own SQL Server.
Yeah, and you know, in terms of feature parity, you mentioned the on-prem having parity with the VM, but the SQL as a service, there could be things, depending on what the website's doing, if it's just, you know, basic read updates, it could be fine, but there could be things.
The protocols are both TDS-based. They're very similar. But you are right, there are some cases, and they're documented on MSDN. There are certainly some things that aren't supported in SQL. It used to be called SQL Azure, and I have to say the proper name, which is Windows Azure SQL Database.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so we're officially out of time. So Mohit, Chris, I want to thank you all. This is awesome for the launch event.
Thank you.
And thanks. We're going to have the next session coming up in just a minute.